It's Thursday, and that means it's time to talk to a professional who would never forget a name.
So I wish your son Miller all the best.
My name is Noah!
Why? Because his voice is so velvety smooth.
Yo, Manella, kick it one time, boy.
It makes the girls go,
oh my.
He's a rapper so fly.
So if you want sports talk that's more than just a score, you gotta listen to Wade on KD Country 94. We got the tunes that'll make you shake and bake. G96.3, The Lake.
He makes Eminem wanna cry. It's the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney.
Sportos, motorheads, geeks, they all adore him. They think he's a righteous dude.
Right now on The Sports Ticket, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie at 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.
It is the voice of the Jayhawks every Thursday right now on The Sports Ticket, and it is Brian Haney. Brian, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great, Wade. Thanks again for the awesome open. Tell Miller I said gracias as well.
I will do that. I played that intro for him that night after you were on last week, and he got a good kick out of it. So my wife thought it was pretty funny, too. So I've pleased three people, so my work is done here. All right, let's talk about the Sunflower Showdown earlier this week. And, you know, I'm going to say this for KU fans. I don't think they look at it as a dud, but I think as a neutral fan watching the game, you probably thought it was a bit of a letdown. And if you're a K-State fan, you definitely think it was a letdown. The one thing that really stands out to me, and I think it's all about how you look at things maybe in life. What do you think Bill Self was telling his team at halftime when they're up 13? Were they fortunate to be up 13 with 12 turnovers and 7 missed free throws, or was the idea we should be up 25 because we shouldn't turn the ball over, we should make our free throws, and we shot 70%?
You know, I think it was a combination of, guys, this is a little bit fool's gold. You're not going to be able to maintain this pace shooting the ball, and, you know, we've got to make sure we tighten it up and not cough it up so much. And then secondly, hey, Way to get after him and build the early lead. Let's keep this going. Let's keep the pedal to the metal. I think he was encouraged, but at the same time, you know, he's quick to point out you're never going to see a box score like that, but once every 10 years or so. I mean, to then shoot 7 of 26 in the second half, just miserable shooting after 70% first half, but then the free throw numbers doubled. So it was clearly a Jekyll and Hyde type game, and it's rare to cough it up that many times on the road in terms of turnovers and yet win going away like that. And for Kansas, I know you mentioned some fans, you know, might have felt like the game didn't live up to the hype after a lot of build-up expecting a neck-and-neck game. I think a lot of Kansas fans, quite frankly, were just glad to see KU build a lead, maintain it, sustain it.
Yeah,
they got it down to 5 on a couple of junctures with a couple of 8-0 runs, but the Hawks never gave up the lead. And how many times this season have we talked about KU building up a double-digit lead only to give it all the way up and actually go down, you know, at some point. Arizona State, K-State the first game, Baylor, Iowa State, Texas Tech, Oklahoma, all games, I guess not Texas Tech, but all games in which KU had a double-digit lead and gave it up. And in some cases came back to still win. In a couple of cases, lost. And so I think for a lot of KU fans, as much as we love the late-game drama and all that, as somebody said to me, that looked like the old Kansas. The Kansas we're used to, it comes in and, you know, puts the foot on the throat. It's not like they blew them out, but at the same time, it was kind of nice to play it at an arm's distance for the bulk of the game. And while you felt threatened, certainly, when Kansas couldn't throw it in the ocean for the first 6 minutes of the second half, and you thought, uh-oh, here comes Dean Wade, they're about to pull even, they never got over that hump beyond the two-possession game. And that was a sight to sore eyes, quite frankly, because far too often Kansas, whether it be because of fatigue due to the lack of depth or, you know, just shots going cold because you're so guard-reliant, we've seen a Kansas team let off the gas and allow teams back in it instead of just putting the hammer down. And this is back-to-back games, Wade, including Texas A&M, where they played from out in front throughout and never were truly threatened to the point where it was back even or you know, one possession type game. That, to me, you know, is definite progress and something that we hope continues because they put themselves in a great position. point, they almost had an even better position last night, had both Iowa State and Texas won. Texas flat out gave the game away. You know, have stood up eight inside the last 90 seconds, but they were missing free throws left and right, and they lose in overtime on a game winner by Keenan Evans. But you like how it stacks up, and we get into that here in a little bit more on the scheduling for Kansas on the back nine of this 18-game Big 12 slate. But if this is how they're going to play, with even more confidence, even more separation, boy, you really like your chances at 14 straight.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, with us, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie at 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. Okay, now K-State did a very poor job of attacking KU's zone. Bruce Weber said after the game, you know, KU doesn't play zone, really didn't prepare for any zone during the week. But having said that, they played Baylor the week prior. They really carved it up pretty well. Teams should know how to attack a zone, at least somewhat. And K-State continued to settle for long jumpers. And Bill Self, you and I know as well as anybody that he is not a big fan of zone defenses. But there have been a few times he's used it this year. And the other night, he really almost had to with all the foul trouble. Plus, he said this helped us a little bit better in defending Dean Wade. And that zone, which I hear Self say every single year when he uses it barely, he'll say, oh God, that was not a good zone. We just threw something different at him. But Devontae Graham says they practice it maybe more than they used to.
Yeah, and it's funny how spot on that is about how self-deprecating he is about the usage of that zone. We were talking on Hawk Talk last night about Larry Brown and how often we talked to Coach Brown. It was a conversation that had come up from an audience question. And then I made the kind of innocuous off-the-cuff comment, well, I bet Coach Brown would have been proud to see you make an in-game adjustment that was so effective with that zone. And he said, nah, he would have been embarrassed that we couldn't stop anybody man-to-man and had to go to it. You know, and he's quick to, you know, deflect the credit on things like that and point out the deficiency that led to them having to go to the zone. But you're right. I thought it really flummoxed the K-State offense. And you love Coach Self's ability to make in-game adjustments, and he truly is one of the greatest I've ever seen at any level of that. And so kudos to him. And it may not be the brand of basketball that is his bread and butter or what he'd ideally want to play, but all the best coaches adjust what they do and who they are based on the personnel they have. And you know what? We couldn't have forecast at the start of the year that Kansas would be this thin in certain spots. Most Kansas fans didn't even know the name Silvio De Sousa back in October. And we sure thought Billy Preston would be an integral part of everything. And you wouldn't be talking about Mitch Lightfoot as your number two big, who on Monday was your number one big.
Yeah.
But that's the situation they're in. And the foul trouble wreaks havoc. And when fatigue sets in, sometimes you got to junk it up a little bit. And like I said, all the good coaches can make tweaks, even if it goes directly in contrast to what they normally would like to do. You got to play, see what your strengths, and accentuate positives. And I think himself's done a masterful job of that yet again.
Let's talk about Udoka. Certainly the talk of free throw shooting, and he did shoot a few the other night against K-State. He hit his last two. This first one's, well, he missed three, actually. There was a lane violation. Those weren't close. But then later in the game, he knocked down two and looked pretty confident at the line. I know they've been working on that quite a bit. But really, I want to take a different angle on this, and that is, it seemed to me, and maybe I'm off here, that early in the game when Udoka caught, I think, once or twice, it was almost like he was waiting to get hacked. He took a little bit longer to get into his move, and which tells me that obviously that whole hack-a-doke or poke-a-doke is in his head, obviously, which to me is only human nature. Udoka, Bill's Coach Self said after the game, you know, he was not a factor whatsoever. How does Kansas get him through that?
You know, I think they can establish him earlier in games by making it a priority to go inside to him. And obviously the other night they hit three threes quicker than you could throw an Emaw at any Wildcat wearing purple in there. And next thing you know, it's a 12-0 run. And they didn't need to establish him as much because they were running in threes once a night. But I think for Doak, it's all about establishing confidence early in the game, getting him involved, getting him deep touches. When he catches on the block on some of those big lobs where they throw it up over the top and he actually catches it behind his man, nobody's going to get in between him and the basket at that point. And you feel sorry for the poor rim that's about to get ripped off the goal when that's the case. But when he catches it 12 feet from the bucket and he has to kind of back his way down and has to do that running kind of hook-type shot, you know, he's been really good at that at times this season, but those are also the times when he gets fouled typically. And so I saw what you saw, and yet I didn't look at it the same way in terms of him kind of waiting to get fouled. Part of me was like, you know what, he's okay getting fouled. He wants to try out this new shot a little bit. Not that he's looking forward to free throws.
That could be.
But keep in mind, he didn't get any opportunities versus A&M.
Right.
And I think he's a guy that needs to see the ball go through the hoop. And it does look a lot tighter with the elbow underneath the hand. And as we all saw, he hit 2-0 in the second half to the jubilation of the folks behind the bench.
Yeah.
I mean, they jumped up. And like one of the fans, you know, we get about 15 tickets behind the visiting bench when we're on the road. One of the fans like slapped me a high five while I was calling the game. I mean, everybody was so excited for two made free throws in a regular season game. It was crazy. But yeah, you know, great to see him have a little bit of confidence. And I think genuinely wants to get more opportunities, because with success in game comes greater confidence and, you know, the chance to settle in a little bit and not be so nervous and, oh, brother, here we go again. I mean, there were games before Oklahoma even, where he got fouled and you saw the body language, maybe you read his lips as he was circling back toward the free throw line, and you knew that was the last place in the world he wanted to be. And I'm not saying he wants to be there now, but as Coach Self has talked about, he and Doak personally have spent a ton of time on this. And I think the best thing for Doak right now is to get to the stripe four or five times a game and knock down two or three and make two or three become three or four, and slowly start to inch your way up towards 60%. If he could be in the mid-50s, Kansas could go far. If he's a liability in the 38 to 40% range, and I realize that's not a huge difference between those percentages I just gave you, but it could make all the difference in a late-game, one-possession scenario. And that's what it's going to get, though, because realistically, as Bill Self said, you're not going to go from 40 to 80 overnight. You're not going to go from 40 to 65 in the same season, necessarily. But they feel good about the tweaks that they've made. And Coach would tell you it's a substantial tweak. It's not subtle. It's substantial. But muscle memory cannot be solved in a matter of days or weeks. It takes months. And so let's be cautiously optimistic with the tweaks they've made.
All right. So Kansas is 7-2 in the conference, one game lead over Texas Tech and Oklahoma. And we're at the halfway point of the Big 12 race. And we said, you and I think before the season, both predicted Kansas at 14-4. Bill Self said 13-5 would win this league, and I think he said even outright earlier in the year, and he looks pretty smart right now. I think you and I both said that we thought this league would cannibalize one another, because there isn't a big difference between the top and bottom of this conference. We saw that last night with Iowa State whipping West Virginia and Ames. And I'm starting to look, and I look at KU's schedule. KU has five more home games left on the Big 12 slate. And assuming KU wins all five of those, it's conceivable, and I know this is not the way Bill Self's going to look at it, but it's conceivable that Kansas could lose the rest of their Big 12 road games, win the rest of their Big 12 home games, finish 12-6, and have at least a share of this title. It seems like this league is doing what we thought, cannibalizing one another.
Yeah, it's definitely conceivable, and I think at the same time, probably something you don't want to put yourself into because you're sharing it.
Oh, of course not. We know KU doesn't like to share.
Exactly. And last night, you know, showed me that while Texas Tech could still go out and lose TCU this Saturday, and they have to go to Morgantown still and all that, they've got a senior that's playing out of his mind right now, and they're going to factor into this race deeper than what many would have given them credit for. Still ranked in the top 10. You know, finding ways to make that home court maybe the second toughest in the league, or third toughest, depending on what you want to say about West Virginia and Oklahoma. But to me, eventually the cream rises to the top. Eventually we get true separation. And I said all along, I thought KU would win it with a week and a half to go.
Yes, he did.
Meaning 15 games out of the 18 down, you got this thing clinched. I was really hoping that we get more separation last night and Texas could hang on, though, because you want some margin for error. You want the chance to stub your toe once and still have breathing room, because inevitably it may happen. I mean, if Malik Newman doesn't go nuts a week and a half ago versus Baylor, they lose at home to Baylor.
Yeah.
And how bad does that loss look right now? And I realize Baylor just pushed Oklahoma to the brink in Norman, 98-96 on Tuesday, but that would have been a bad loss compared to, you know, what you have coming up, home and away and all that. But to your point, the schedule on the back nine does look softer than the front nine. And Coach Self says he actually, most seasons, will cut a schedule in half and take a look at, okay, where is it advantageous, where is it more challenging? He says this year it doesn't apply as much because home court means less than it ever has, not just in Kansas, but anywhere. And he feels like on any given night, any team can lose, and so he doesn't look at it that way. But for the sake of the argument, as you said, there's five home games compared to four road games. I would contend that four of your toughest five road games are already behind you.
Yes.
Maybe five of your toughest six are already behind you. And I would tell you that while every team at this point has one team they've yet to play and will play twice on the back nine, Kansas has the worst team to play twice on the back nine. So there's a lot of things that shape up well. And yet, as much as we love that, I remind you, they nearly lost at home to Baylor, nearly lost at home to K-State. And so we can't just chalk it up or rock chalk it up that they're going to take care of business at home, especially with Oklahoma and West Virginia still coming to town. TCU could be tough at home. Who knows? But I think your point about the cannibalization of a league is a really good one, and you hope that continues to happen with teams going up to Iowa State and losing, with teams going into Austin, Texas and losing. Teams that aren't necessarily going to be in the top three of the league, although Texas was close to entering that conversation had they won last night, but teams that will have a say in the race, like TCU, who beat West Virginia in Fort Worth. Like we said, the teams in the bottom three of the league, whoever that proves to be, will wind up having a say in the race because they're going to upset teams that are in the top three, and that has happened every single week to somebody that we considered a contender. Let's hope it continues to happen, not at KU's expense, because if it does, then maybe you get separation with 2 weeks to go. Maybe you get separation with 3 weeks to go and you call this thing over. Last night would have gone a long way. It hung a second game of separation on Texas Tech, and it would have been Kansas one game ahead of Oklahoma and then two games ahead of four teams after that, a four-way tie for third.
Yeah.
And I think you'd really like it had you had that type of breathing room. But it's nice to have two games on West Virginia, and like you said, protect that home court, which Kansas hasn't done as good of a job of this year, but typically does, and it's potentially smooth sailing to a 14th straight.
Yeah, KU road wins at West Virginia, at TCU, at Texas, and at K-State this past week. And K-State fans out here keep telling me over and over, it's over. KU's going to win their 14th straight conference title. And they said, why? Because that's what KU does. But secondly, K-State fans tell me, we will help KU out like we do every year. We'll win a game, maybe we shouldn't, and that'll help KU get that separation. And I'm like, well,
yeah.
I'm sure KU fans are perfectly fine if that's the equation that occurs again this year. I think
I'm on board. I am an out-of-the-closet Dean Wade fan. I love this kid.
Oh,
and
he's a good kid.
If it means beating other teams that are in line with KU. Now, the thing is, K-State's still within striking distance,
true,
so we can't cheer for him too much.
Right.
But yeah, if it means knocking off, you know, a Texas Tech, West Virginia, Oklahoma-type team, absolutely. But, like you said, they were a whisker and eyelash away from being tied for first. That thing's gone a different way on Monday night, so we'll cheer for them to a certain extent. How about that?
That sounds good. Okay, Oklahoma State's the opponent coming up to Lawrence in the Fog Allen Fieldhouse on Saturday. And you can hear that on Z96.3 at Lake. You're home for the Jayhawks in North Central Kansas. Tip time at 11. Oklahoma State, a team that I've watched at times, when they get hot, they're tough to stop offensively. Defensively, I haven't been too impressed when I've watched them.
Yeah, they can score over 80 a game, but you're right. They give up a ton, too. They're the team that gave up 48 to Trae Young, but beat him and defended him so well on the last possession. If you watch that game, they couldn't even get off a shot. And so it's within them, in small bursts, to be a better defensive team than what they are, but it's more of an offensive team at this point. At the same time, I think Mike Boynton's done a great job. Let me ask you, how old are you exactly, Wade? I think we're similar to the same age.
Yeah, I'm 40. I hate to say, I'm 42, so I'm about 45 years old.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm 37. Coach Boynton just turned 36 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I think it was the 17th of January. He just turned 36. He was an assistant last year, obviously. A lot of folks were surprised by this hire. Coach Self has a ton of respect for him. He says his team plays as hard as anybody they'll compete against, just in terms of emptying their bucket at all five positions. And that could sound like coach speak, but I don't know. I kind of see it. I've watched him enough to see what he's talking about. Big win at Florida State on the road. Big win over Oklahoma in overtime. You know, they looked dead in the water to start the game. He had the huge separation to start the game. Oklahoma comes roaring back. I think it was 25-6. And you think, oh, man, OSU's just going to lay down now because they gave up this 19-point lead. And then they beat them in overtime. And so there's some fight there. Obviously, Jeffrey Carroll can fill it up. I think Tavares Shine's a terrific athlete, underrated significantly. And it's going to be a good challenge. You know, there's a lot of distractions this weekend with the reunion going on, but that's not anything the players are going to be distracted by. I think Coach Self's time is spread out a little bit, but you know he's going to be dialed in on beating his alma mater. But we do have some special festivities going on. There's going to be a special induction, or rather a special ceremony, an unveiling, if you will, for a bench that's going to be on the south side of Allen Fieldhouse, kind of by the ticket window, in honor of Ted Owens. And I think many would agree with me. Ted Owens is one of the more overlooked Kansas coaches, not just coaches, but Kansas figureheads. And his players got together, and they raised the money for this. They're the ones putting this on. I have an honor to get to preside over the unveiling and pull back the curtain with Coach Owens and Bud Stallworth. But this was something that Bud and the guys from the Ted Owens era, 60s and 70s, early 80s, thought that their coach deserves. And that's going to go in right after the game. Then upwards of 400 people get together for this banquet on Saturday night celebrating 120 years of Kansas basketball. It's going to be a special, special weekend. But obviously all that can go sour if you don't take care of business at 11 a.m. So hopefully the Hawks will do just that.
All right, time for off-the-wall question. And this first question is not off the wall, but I need to set the tone here. Who is your favorite NFL team?
Oh, so this is actually something that will cost some points with the audience, but I'm a lifelong Patriots fan.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, that ends the interview right there. Okay. Yeah, it was good talking to you.
My grandpa was neighbors with Drew Bledsoe as a kid in Walla Walla, Washington. So it's not a bandwagon jumping type thing.
Okay, so that leads me to the off-the-wall question. Is I'm having some fun with this week. In protest of the Chiefs bringing back Bob Sutton as a defensive coordinator and Andy Reid saying he's going to be calling the plays again next year, I'm a person that I want to see the Chiefs make the Super Bowl sometime before I die. If the Royals can make the World Series, I guess the Chiefs can make the Super Bowl. And so, and that was before Alex Smith was traded the other day. I laid it out to my listeners that I'm willing to adopt a different team, and I'm willing to wear a jersey of different teams. Tell me who your favorite NFL team is. Provide a jersey. I will wear a different one each day this week. And Monday I wore a Seahawks jersey, which was it was painful. And on top of that, it was a Tyler Lockett jersey. Then on Tuesday, I wore an Eli Manning New York Giants jersey. And Wednesday, it was a Cowboys jersey, which really hurt the wear. Today, it's even more painful. I am literally burning as I'm wearing a Pittsburgh Steelers jersey. And tomorrow, it's to be announced what jersey I'm going to wear. And then I'm going to leave it to the listeners and the audience and everything on social media to determine, should I pick one of these five teams as my new team to replace the Chiefs, or go ahead and stay on the bandwagon and stay a Chiefs fan. So that leads me to the off-the-wall question. If you were in my predicament and you decided, that's it, I'm fed up with the Patriots, I wanted to pick a different team, who would be your next team in line to be your favorite team to replace the Patriots?
It's an easy answer, and it's an on-the-wall question. I would go buy, which I've already purchased, a number 15 Kansas City Chiefs jersey, and I would sit back and enjoy the five-time Pro Bowl quarterback you're about to see born, Patrick Mahomes. You know, I covered this kid at Texas Tech, so I'm obviously biased. I'm very high on him. There's going to be growing pains, don't get me wrong, but Mahomes is going to do big things. Be patient with him. He'll make throws you didn't think possible, and you're going to be right back in that Kansas City red and gold before you know it. Wait, I promise you that.
Well, I am. I have to admit, I'm happy with that decision that they traded Alex Smith and opened the door for Patrick Mahomes, so I'm with you on that. And you now have totally, I know you're a big fan of Dumb and Dumber, you have now totally redeemed yourself with a lot of our fans out here by mentioning Chiefs after the Patriots, so...
I've already got the jersey queued up and ready to go. I'm just waiting on him to be the starter, so now I guess I get to wear it next week.
That sounds good. I'm a little cheaper. I'll probably buy a discounted Alex Smith jersey just to save money. You know, just to do it. You know they're half price when they get rid of players.
That's true, but you can buy them over in Japan for like $20. I'll tell you
You gonna hook me up with that connection? That sounds good, man.
You got it.
All right.
Put it on the air.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, have a good call on Saturday. Thanks for the time, and we'll talk again next week.
Take care.
Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks, every Thursday, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, and life and crop insurance. Stop by, see Matt and Jamie, 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.